We get it underway in hour two, though, by hopping on board the telephone line to talk a little baseball with our friend Sean McAdam of MassLive.com. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Rich, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you today?
Can't complain.
Well, can the Reds?
I'm actually on my way to a movie that you might have some interest in or perhaps have even seen already. The Immediate Family.
Oh,
you know what I think?
I sure do. I'm really looking forward to seeing that and hoping to get Denny Tedesco on the show. He's the guy who also did the great Wrecking Crew documentary.
Absolutely. In fact, my wife and I are headed to the very same theater to see The Immediate Family that we saw the Wrecking Crew in.
Well, I'm jealous of that. I can't wait to see the movie. And these are all the guys that were in the session musicians with, like, what, James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, and so many great groups and individual artists in the 70s.
Yeah, all that whole Southern California singer-songwriter movement used a lot of these guys who were, like the members of the Wrecking Crew, kind of nameless and faceless to the general public, but had and continue to have a great relationship or a great reputation in the music community. And this is kind of the story of them playing together and their adventures and also kind of going out on the road as themselves for the first time a few years ago and recording an album under the name The Immediate Family.
Well, I'm jealous. I look forward to hearing all about it. I hope you give us a full review and let us know what you think of it.
I'll take notes, I promise.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little baseball notes and see what's going on here. It's been an interesting offseason so far. Well, let's start with what the Red Sox have done. Was it a case of addition by subtraction in sending Alex Verdugo to the Yankees?
I think there was a little bit of that, yeah. It was pretty clear that the relationship between Verdugo and Alex Cora had become strained, perhaps beyond repair, particularly with that incident last August when Verdugo showed up 2 hours before a game and pulled from the lineup. And Cora really said it was one of his worst days being the manager of the Red Sox. It clearly shook him. And I think we subsequently found out that this was not exactly a one-off for Verdugo. And couple that with having been benched for lack of hustle in Cleveland early in the season, it just seemed like Cora had given him a lot of chances, and Verdugo kept taking advantage of them. And, you know, frankly, the look of the outfield with all the left-handed bats they already have, with Duran, with Yoshida, you know, some other guys that are on the horizon, Roman Anthony down the road. I think they thought, we're too left-handed. We need to get a right-handed bat, which led to them getting Tyler O'Neill later in the week. And also the opportunity to improve their upper-level pitching inventory. Most of the guys who are going to be real factors here are kind of just now getting to double A, whereas the Red Sox were able to get a guy who had some major league experience for the bullpen. And a guy like Richard Fitz, they got a starter, somebody who could be a back-end starter. And then they kind of took a flyer on Giudice, who hasn't pitched professionally since signing last summer. So, like most everything, Rich, it wasn't any one thing, but I think they had kind of come to a consensus that it was probably time for all parties involved to move on.
You mentioned the Tyler O'Neill deal, and that got overshadowed by the signing of Ohtani, but this looks like a pretty good move for the Red Sox, and not a high salary. It's a low risk and possibly with a decent reward for a guy who's just a couple of years removed from having more than 30 homers and has won a Gold Glove.
Yeah, won multiple Gold Gloves, finished eighth in the NL MVP voting that year in 21 when he hit 34 homers. for the Cardinals. His problem has been staying healthy. He's had, I think, 12 trips to the IL in his first five seasons and has not played more than 100 games since that 2021 season. But frankly, here, particularly on a one-year deal or a one-year before free agency, even if they just got platoon at-bats out of him and gave themselves a little balance from the right side with those other lefty outfielders that are in the mix, and the potential for him to offer above-average defense really in all three spots gives them some versatility. He can play left while they DH Yoshida. He can play center if they don't want Duran facing a tough lefty. He can act as depth in right field if Abreu is the guy they're going to play there. So you're right. They didn't give up much. They gave up somebody that they got Kike Hernandez for at the deadline and another guy they claimed a year ago who hasn't pitched above AAA and Victor Santos. So didn't give up much, won't pay him a lot. 5.5 is the projected salary arbitration number. And it does, as you say, have some upside to it.
Now, are they still looking to add some offensive parts? Maybe a second baseman, a guy like Whit Merrifield comes to mind, or maybe even another right-handed bat, a guy who could play outfield and a little first base?
I'd say the second base situation is more likely to be addressed. I don't know that they're going to find anybody, you know. It's still possible, I guess, that they could bring a guy like Adam Duvall back. He would give that righty bump another outfield option. And though he hasn't done it in a long time, he's someone who has played some first base earlier in his career. And it wouldn't seem out of the realm of possibility that he could give them 30 games over there and let Casas get some time off his feet and also a breather against some tough lefties. So that's a possibility. I think they view second base as more urgent in terms of upgrades. I can't believe that they're going to start with some combination of Emmanuel Valdez, Pablo Reyes, David Hamilton. There's not a lot of experience at the big league level there. Valdez has some offensive appeal, but needs to work on his defense. Reyes, the career utility guy. Hamilton has looked overmatched in his little major league time. So I think that's more of a priority, but they may find a way to squeeze another bat in there too.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Obviously, the top priority in the offseason is to bolster that pitching staff, especially the rotation. Reports are they're going to meet with Yamamoto, as several other teams have done. How much is that guy going to cost, though? And has the Ohtani deal driven up the price for some of these top-end pitching prospects?
I don't know that it necessarily gets impacted by Ohtani because he is so unique. But certainly the market for starting pitching we've seen has already kind of gone through the roof when somebody like Seth Lugo, who had a nice year last year with San Diego, but really has only been a starter 1 year in his career, and he's getting $45 million for three. You know, Sonny Gray at age 35 is getting a multi-year commitment. We're seeing Aaron Nola get 7 years at the top of the market. So, as always, the price keeps going up for pitching, and I think that's particularly true with Yamamoto. When you look at a guy who is just 25, who has been dominant, who's been healthy, and has the stuff to profile as a number one over here, I mean, I can't think of the last frontline starter who reached the free agent market at 25 as a player from North America. And granted, you have to project that he can make the transition the way others have, like Kodai Senga last year with the Mets. And I think Yamamoto's stuff is potentially better and his ceiling higher. So what started out as, well, he's going to cost $200 million plus, has quickly morphed into he might get three or more. Now, whether those estimates are going to include the posting fee, which would be a percentage of whatever the deal is or not. But it's pretty clear he's going to get a long commitment. And if the number is not $300 million, at minimum, it will be the high $200
million. Well, if he's the Red Sox number one priority, of course, they're not telling anybody this. Who's number two, do you think? Would it be somebody like a Jordan Montgomery?
I think Montgomery is a nice fit for them, but mostly in that secondary mode. He's a nice number three to slot into the middle of your rotation, give them another lefty to go with Chris Sale. But I don't see him as a guy who gives you that number one or even a really established number two. And I think that's what they have to find, whether it's Yamamoto or through a trade of top prospects to get a pitcher with some controllable years remaining. So depending on what else they do, Montgomery's a nice complementary addition to that rotation. And, you know, it would seem like it's a pretty good fit. His wife is going to spend a good chunk of the next few years in her residence at a Boston hospital. So all things being relatively equal, why wouldn't he want to be here with her so long as the Red Sox can convince him that they're serious about being a contender and that he's going to have a chance to win here? He's just coming off a world championship with Texas. Sometimes that works two ways. It can whet a guy's appetite to want to win even more, or it can change someone's priorities to the point where they say, well, I was lucky enough to get a ring. I experienced that. I still want to win, but there are other factors like my family's comfort, geography, fit, and money that become more a sense of priorities once a guy has already won once, as Montgomery just did.
So who might there be out there for pitching targets that they could acquire through a trade?
Well, there's where they've kind of limited themselves. They have made it known that they do not want to trade for guys who only have a year or even 2 years of control remaining, because they think that just gets them into a never-ending cycle where you're overpaying to rent a guy for a couple of years, and 2 years later you're right back where you started from, having to go on the high end of the market. So they want a guy that they can control for more than a couple of seasons. That takes them out on guys like Cease, Burns, Bieber, Glasnow, the guys that are known to be shopped, but the Red Sox are not interested. So to get guys with three or more years of service time, you're going to have to make a deal that's pretty painful. And when I say pretty painful, I mean dealing one of their top three or four prospects and more. Certainly even the best player in the system, whether you believe that to be Roman Anthony or Marcelo Mayer or Kyle Teal, you'll need to add to one of those, but it's probably going to require you giving up one of them too, in addition to some other prospects and maybe some players off the major league roster with a year or two of service time. Maybe Jaron Duran gets thrown into a deal like that and you go with Rafaela or Abreu or O'Neill in center for the short term. So you could look at somebody like Seattle with George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, who are low service time guys with the ability to profile as number one or number two guys. You look at Florida, who has, Lizardo and some other young pitching that they might think about moving there. You have to find a team that matches up. They've got to be willing to give up some promising pitching to fill some other holes. And there aren't a lot of those guys around, but if you're out on a couple of big guys like Nola and Snell and lose out on Yamamoto, and you don't want to deal for Corbin Burns because he could leave you in October or November, well, you got to find another pathway to find pitching. And as I said, it could result in a painful deal where they lose one elite prospect and a couple of very good ones too.
Interesting times ahead for the Red Sox, to say the least. Sean, we appreciate you making time. Great to talk with you. As always, hope you enjoy the movie tonight, and I hope you and the family have a wonderful Christmas, and we'll talk with you in the new year.
Sounds good, Rich, and Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
You got it. Thanks again, Sean. Sean McAdam from MassLive.com with us here on Downtown.